listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Your Ultimate Life today. Welcome to Your Ultimate Life. I am so excited. Today we're going to talk about the power of your personal story, because your story makes such a difference. And most people don't do anything with something that is as powerful as their story. Today, I have a special guest as we do this, Carrie Rickabaugh. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kellen. So excited to talk with you tonight.
Yeah, me too. So just before we got on, we were talking about storytelling, mm-hmm. and I want to talk with you a little bit about that. Let's just start there, because most people... Two things happen. Everybody's got tough stuff in their life. Mm-hmm. And often people are ruined by it, and they go through life bitter and angry and whatever. And some people choose, instead of to be ruined, to be refined by those difficult things. And it's a weird thing that happens when people are refined, even if they were ruined for a day, week, month, year, decade, doesn't matter. They later choose to be refined by those things. With that refinement comes this yearning to help other people and do something. So the first question is, why do you think that is?
I think so much of it has to do with the change that we go through, that we want to bring that as a gift to other people. You know, I think it's an act of service. That's what it is for me. Is it's not so much of helping people, but it's serving people in a way that they may not know how to get that otherwise.
I love that. I think you're right. We're built to love and serve. And, you know, when we have experience of those cool things, or grace or help of others, or grace or both, we just want to share it. So I want to take that as leverage to jump in to your personal circumstance. So yeah. You have experience where you have had both events, circumstances in life ruin you and then refine you. Correct. With some period of time in between. Right. So let's explore in your life for just a minute the truth of that, that there's two pieces. One, that things can ruin you and then refine you. And mm-hmm. two, with that refinement comes this growth in the yearning to serve. So tell us a little bit about that experience for you.
So my upbringing, it actually was the first, you know, 4.5 decades of my life was very tumultuous, was very traumatic. There was a lot of abuse of all different kinds from many different people, family, friends, you know, and it was hard. And I got to a point where I didn't even want to be alive anymore, because I felt stuck. I felt like that's all there was for me, and that I couldn't change, because I didn't know anybody who had ever been through anything like what I had been, or so I thought.
Right.
And it was, you know, in this society, we're taught a lot to not really talk about the trauma, the negative. And especially when there's like abuse or anything like that, that something is given to us to carry, we think that that chains us down for the rest of our life.
Do you think that when that is inflicted on someone, mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how it is, verbal, physical, sexual, emotional, whatever it is, yeah. it does whatever it does. So it beats us down in some way, but it also, you know, you said we're taught not to talk about it. It also makes us feel like, even though we didn't do it, it makes us feel less than, like, yeah. We're somehow a piece of crap because that happened. Tell yes. Tell me why. Why do we absorb that? It's not true, and we know it talking about it, but why do we do that?
I know for me, the feeling was broken. I felt broken, because I felt like things had happened to me and I couldn't fix them. And that was my mentality, is that I, to not be broken, I had to fix it. But when something is given to you in the form of abuse, like you said, whatever form, there's not a lot that you can do to quote unquote fix it, right? It's not like a broken leg where you can put a cast on it and it heals. And so I think a lot of people just feel stuck, and that it's a weight that they're carrying, even though it isn't true. That's the feeling that they have inside.
Why do we teach people, like, if you broke your leg, or I did, like, I wouldn't think twice about going to a doctor or somebody and saying, you know, yeah, we need to fix this.
Yeah.
Why do we, like, what is, I have to say, what is wrong? Why do we do that? Why do we create this thing that says, oh, this brokenness you can't talk about? Like, I think what is that?
I think it's learned judgment. I think it's taught through society that, you know, you don't want to share this because we are taught not to talk about it because it makes other people feel uncomfortable and other people don't know what to do with it. And so we're just taught that this is a battle. You know, we, like you said at the very beginning, we all go through it. And I think that alienates us sometimes to feel like, oh, we all go through it, but mine is this and I don't know anybody else. And so I'm different. I'm more broken than anybody else. I don't know who can help me. I think a lot of times people just don't know that there is help available. And so the assumption is I've been carrying this. I'm going to keep carrying it because that's what I can do.
Yeah. So yeah, it's but I'm different. Yeah, but but nobody knows the trouble I've seen, but Jesus kind of thing. Right.
Yes.
Nobody can relate to me. Nobody. And, in the business of personal development that you're in and that I'm in, we learn to know, to actually know through our own experience and through seeing many circumstances, that idea of isolation is not true. It's not true. You're not the only one. You're not even close to being the only one.
Nope.
So when you were describing it, it reminded me of a cancer diagnosis. Because when somebody's diagnosed with cancer, often what they report is people avoid them. They don't know how to talk to them because we have this story about it being death and, ooh, they're somehow going to lose their hair or their eyebrows or get all weird or whatever. And so we don't know how to talk to them. And I was wondering if this is a little the same. So you're now broken in some way that is it's unfixable and too awful for words. And so we treat them like a cancer patient or something like that. Does that make sense to you? I don't know, but that's what came up for me as you were describing
it. Absolutely. I think some of it is self-isolation. Like, I think a lot of times when we feel that broken, we pull back because we don't want to be a burden. And that's a societal learned thing, that we don't want to be a burden to other people. We don't want to be too much. We don't want to share our trauma. And I think so much of it has to do with, as technology is advancing in the world, where we get to see Facebook posts or we get to see Instagram, and we get to see the best side of everyone. And we don't get to see what's happening behind the scenes. And so we see everybody having these amazing lives and our lives don't feel like they compete at the same time. So how would anybody else know what I'm going through if they only have these wonderful things that happen to them?
And you know, the funny part is they don't compare because all that's on the Facebook or the Insta reel or whatever, TikTok, is the highlight reel, right? It's the party and the successful trip down the ski slope or whatever.
Yeah.
And the beat down at school or at work and none of that's not shared. So in your own journey, you carried some stuff. You thought you were the only one that nobody ever in any universe had ever had it, and therefore nobody could understand it. And then something had to happen, either suddenly or gradually, to help you realize, like, you were wearing a set of lenses that are just lenses and you're free to take them off. Mm-hmm. Like, what inspired you to want to, like, find some way to take these lenses off?
You say it was either gradually or sudden. For me, it was actually both. I had two different things happen. And the first one was not a decision as much as it was a twisting an arm behind my back, so to say, metaphorically. So I was at a really low point in my life to where I had made a plan to not be alive anymore. Mm-hmm. And I had put things in place, but I hadn't told a soul. And a friend of mine who did not know this, did not know how depressed I was, did not know how isolated I felt, called me randomly like a day or two before and happened to say, I keep getting this nudge that you need to speak with this friend of mine who's a coach. And I had already been through three different therapists who hadn't been able to help me. And so I was like, I'm not investing again. I don't want to talk to this guy. And this friend of mine would not let me off the phone until I promised to talk to this guy four times. And I'm like, it's not going to help. Nobody can help me. These professional therapists couldn't help me. Why do I think that this guy's going to be able to help me? And he's like, please just talk to him four times. And I said, fine, I respect you. I love you. I will do it for you. And that kept me alive for a couple of weeks until this coach and I could meet up. And so
I want you to finish, put a comma right there. Why do you suppose your friend knew the prompting, the inspiration to come and do that? Like, what happened to say, you need to do this to Carrie and you need not to let her off the hook until blah, blah, blah. Like, how did that happen?
It was divine guidance. It's whatever you call it. It's the universe. It was intuition. It was something. He actually didn't even know that that's where I was at until probably about 4 months later when I finally told him. And he just kept telling me, I didn't know why, but I just knew I had to do this and I couldn't let you off the phone.
So when I talk to people about this stuff, and this is a little bit of I wouldn't say a pet peeve, but a curiosity. When we talk about this divine intervention stuff, we're always quick to add, well, it's the universe, it's whatever you call it, so that people don't quit listening and turn it off. So what does Carrie call that?
I call that a nudge from God.
Okay, cool. So then it's a nudge from God. Mm-hmm. What I like to do is I like to ask, and that's why we're doing it. I did that to a guy I interviewed the other day for something else, and he did exactly the same thing, all the stuff. And I said, dude, what do you call it? And then he looked at me like, what do you mean? I said, you said also the crap. It doesn't, you know, and so he laughed at the same time. But anyway, good. So God bugged your friend and said, go call Carrie. I don't want her to do this bad thing that you don't even know about, but I'm going to use you as a messenger.
Exactly.
Now, that presupposes several things. One, that God cares. And two, that your friend's paying attention. And three, that he's willing to go do a thing that might be hard or difficult.
Correct. He was having a hard time in that conversation because he just kept saying, please, please. And I'm like, why is this so important? What do you expect to get from this? Again, knowing that he didn't know anything that I had planned. And he's like, I don't know. I just really want you to do this.
So what does that say to you about, I know I interrupted you, but what does that say to you about the God, the creator, number one, the attention that God pays, and number two, the interest that God shows in our lives, the intimacy and detail. What does that tell you about that?
To me, it tells me that he knows everything that's going on with every one of us. I used to believe in coincidences, and I don't anymore. I think so many things are divinely inspired, even though we can't see it in the moment all the time. But it also is, he cares about each and every one of us to bring other people into our lives at the exact time. Now we get to decide if we're going to go with that or not. I could have gotten off that call and said, I told him I would, but no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to talk to this guy. You know, we get to make that choice as well. But I think it really shows that God knows everything that is actually happening right now and that he cares for every single one of us.
As you progress further down your healing journey, which we'll get back to in a minute, and you've started deciding, and that yearning has come up in you to help other people because of the healing you've experienced. How important is it for you to help people who come to you for help understand and then go to believe in things like nudges, intuition, and so forth, so that they either listen themselves or they listen when others speak? Like, how important do you find that to help people understand that truth. I believe the same thing, and I feel it all the time. I'm just wondering, in your experience, how important is it to help people go there?
I think it's incredibly important because the nudges that come are not always somebody standing on the corner saying, God has a sign for you, go ahead and do this. Sometimes it's your gut feeling, and it's something for you to do for you. Sometimes it's something for you to do for somebody else. And there's you learn the distinction between that. The work I do does a lot of what do you feel inside? And we feel what's good, we feel what's bad, we feel what things look like or where they are or if they're moving or everything. And so the feeling that there is something bigger than you that nudges you, that is a feeling that you will have that you can use that will benefit you and other people. So for me to help other people, that's huge in my life. But to teach other people that, and I have found that most of my clients have been open to it in some way, shape, or form. It's huge because then you can know that you're on a path that is taking you somewhere that is going to serve you or serve somebody else. You know, you're not just lost in the woods saying, here's seven different paths. I'm at a point where there's seven different trails. I'll just pick one at random.
I love that. Yeah. Because when we go back to what we talked about at the beginning about, you know, I'm alone. I'm the only one ever. Nobody knows this, that, and the other. When you yourself discover, certainly was true for me, or when you help somebody else first discover and then believe that they're important enough to either get those intuition inspirations or to be the target of somebody else, like you were, that means that immediately says, yeah, well, then I'm not alone. Not really.
Absolutely.
And how do you find that helps yourself and also people you work with to just that first glimmer of recognition? I guess I'm not really alone.
I can only speak for myself, like truly, but that to me gave me hope. That was a glimmer that there was a possibility for me for my life to change from what it had felt that it had always been. Because before I felt like there were invisible brick walls and they were on all four sides of me and I couldn't move. And that's why I got to the point where I was like, this life isn't worth living if I'm stuck in this. And I felt stuck for 20 years that I hadn't been able to progress. And that took one brick down. And there was a little bit of light that shone through. And I'm like, oh, maybe it's possible that I don't have to stay in this holding pattern for the rest of my life.
I love that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
I was just going to say, it just reminds me of the lyrics of a Leonard Cohen song that talks about there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Yeah. You know, he's probably my favorite all-time songwriter. Anyway, so that's just fabulous. And I think it's so important because, you know, we're talking about creating ultimate life, not tolerable life, not half-baked life, but ultimate life, purpose, prosperity, and joy. And I preach without reservation that anybody, wherever they are, if they want to walk the path and do the work, can have that. It's not exclusive. And I'm not saying it's easy. And I'm not saying you don't got to do some stuff, hard stuff. But it's available to you. And it started with taking a brick out. So the light came in and you were able to see that because your friend was there. They were willing to hear the nudge. They were willing to pester you until you complied or at least said you would. And that opened a brick for you. What happened then?
So that actually kept me alive for a couple of weeks. I kept playing phone tag on purpose with this coach. And when I finally said, okay, I need to fulfill my commitment, I promised my friend that I would do this. Right. And we met. I expected it to be this therapy session. And it was not that at all. It was a lot of neuro-linguistic programming. It was a lot of somatic work. It was a lot of different things that I didn't expect. And he had a very unorthodox method. And I thought that he was just crazy. Like, I thought he was a crazy guy. And I'm like, why did my friend you know, connect me with this guy. But I said, okay, I told him I would talk to him four times. I'll do this four times. I even told the coach, I'm not interested in working with you. I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm only doing this because I told, you know, our mutual friend that I would.
I'm only here because I said I would. So
yep, that's exactly what it was.
And go ahead.
I was like 12 years old. I'm like, I'm not telling you anything about me. And he was like, okay, that's fine. Let's go. And I'm like, what do you mean let's go? And he goes, let's go. And I was like, okay. But at the end of this session, which was happened to be for me 3 hours long, because I was curled up in the fetal position in the dark sobbing. And I'm like, I just can't do this anymore. And it was so different than anything I had ever done before. I was like, okay, what? I don't understand the purpose of this. But the very next day, so that was a Friday evening, and we set up a time to meet Monday evening. Saturday and Sunday, that entire weekend, there was this, and I mean, if we talk about the metaphor of light, there was this space right above my heart that felt like it was this little tiny rectangle that opened up, and it felt light. And it made me feel that the rest of me was dark. And I had no idea of that concept before. And my attention, like I would just be doing the dishes and my attention would constantly be drawn to this. And I'm like, there is something different within me. There is something that has changed when I have felt that nothing has ever changed before. And so I'm like, this is interesting. And maybe it's just kind of a spoof thing, but it lasted 3 days. It lasted Monday until I started working with him again. We had another session doing the same thing, which lasted 4 hours. And then Tuesday, I was like, oh, that square is a little bit bigger.
What is that? So you're describing it in a metaphorical way as a rectangle or a blob of some kind of mm-hmm. light. It was energetic. It felt good. Mm-hmm. It kept drawing your attention to it. Mm-hmm. If you had to guess even, like what is that? Where is it? What is it?
It wasn't. So it was actually a lack of something. And what it was is everything that had ever been said to me that was negative, any judgment anyone had had, all the abuse I had gone through, every single thing I had held on to and believed that that was me. And that's all I was made up of was all mm-hmm. of the bad things that had ever happened. And this was actually for the first time creating space by letting something go. And I didn't know that that was a possibility before that. And this, as time went on, because after we got to the fourth session, I'm like, I want to work with you. I worked with him for 2.5 years. I actually just got off a call with him. And so we still keep in contact. We still work together sometimes. And I worked with him regularly for 2.5 years after that. And I, as the sessions went on, as we started progressing and processing this trauma, I was able to let stuff go. I was able to unburden myself with it. And every time that happened, there was more light that was created because more space opened up.
So I love that. And I'm glad I asked you that because once upon a time in some years past, I was responsible to try to help this one lady in our church. And I had visited her several times and she never let us in the house. I've always met her in the yard or she lived in an apartment building. And, finally, one day, it prevailed upon her to, you know, let us in the house. And it was just like you see on TV, a kind of these hoarder houses where there's tiny little narrow walkways. And, you know, just, you know, I've never seen anything like that in real life. And when you describe the space, it was like what we eventually did is I got some help and took two of my sons over there and we spent the long hours cleaning, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah. I can imagine the space that it created and visibly the lightness that all each bag of garbage that we took out created just space. It was now no garbage where there was garbage, space, space, space. But that somehow created this lightness that you're describing. So that's what came up for me as you said, that was space. So you did that, and then you worked for a couple of years on that, and that is the healing journey that you took. And so my thesis is that it was accompanied by a growing desire to help somebody else or somebody's else in that same fashion. Is that true, or did that not happen for you?
It did. There was something that happened in between that actually kind of deepened that for me. So we had worked about 9 months on healing this, you know, 30 years of trauma that had started when I was about 12. And I had let go of so much. In the coaching world, we talk about peeling back the layers of the onion, right? Until you get to the core. And so we had started working on peeling back all these layers, on letting go of all of the stuff that I could remember. And it opened up and freed so much space within me that it allowed memories that I had repressed when I was 10 of abuse for the first 10 years of my life that I didn't even know were there. It allowed that to come up. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I felt like I backtracked, but in that space of wait, it wasn't linear for me at all. It wasn't like I've learned about this, I started processing, and now life is great and it's tiptoeing through daisies and rainbows. It's, you know, it's not linear. For me, I had a setback in a way. I had a step back. I had a step back where I was like, oh my gosh, here's 10 more years of trauma that came up that I didn't even realize I was holding on to. And it felt like I was starting the process over again. And it felt so discouraging. And it felt like I was right back at step one. And I realized that's what a lot of people go through, because a lot of people have to compartmentalize and a lot of people have to repress things they've been through. And when they start getting better and then all of a sudden they go, it feels like they go backward. That just totally diminishes them wanting to keep going forward. And so they're like, why do I keep going forward if I'm just going to keep coming back? And so getting through that the second time really made me realize that there is a need for people out there who have been through the complex layers of trauma like that, that come up in separate times, to let other people know that there's other people out there that experience that as well.
So that's the not alone thing. Mm-hmm. What happens? Like, we talked about things ruining us and then refining us. So you've talked about your refinement. What happens to a person? And I'm a perfect candidate because I had a boatload of crap happen, et cetera, et cetera. So what happens if we don't ever, if we have X years hidden behind the couch and we never even get to the couch and move all the stuff first to discover layer 2, 3, 5, 27. What happens to me if I do that?
So this is my theory from my experiences.
Yeah.
Before I started working with this coach, say the 7 or 8 years before that, I had developed so many medical issues. I had developed chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, PCOS. When I was 20, I started having seizures randomly, had never had them as a kid. They could never find why. And you know, I would have seizures all the time and had to live a different life because of the seizures. And I got to a point a few years back, probably 4 or 5 years back, where I was almost bedridden. I probably would have been if I hadn't lived alone. And I worked from home and I barely made it from my office to my bedroom every day. And that was my entire life. And what I found is that as I started letting this stuff go, processing and not holding on and carrying all of this negative stuff within me anymore, that my fibromyalgia started to get better. My chronic fatigue started to go better. I haven't had a seizure in 3.5 years. My PCOS doesn't bother me anymore. There's such a connection between the mind and the body, because if you're holding on to stuff inside of you, that's where your organs are. And that's where it's going to hold. And when you let that go, it not only frees up the energy inside of you, but it physically makes you free. It allows me to do things that I've never done before. But if I've had a lot of my circle of people that I know intimately, I know some people who have suffered trauma who could not ever process it. And they passed away because they had all these cancers. I know one person that passed away with 6 different cancers in their body. They were never able to go through it.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that either intentionally or accidentally or not knowing better or not being able to clean these things up, it's like real weights. Like I'm carrying mm-hmm. weights in my backpack.
Absolutely.
And the longer I carry them, the more they get. They mold, they fester, they infect me, that seep through the backpack, they wreck my skin. They wreck my organs like some kind of an alien fungus. So even though the thing itself isn't happening anymore, the memory of it, the belief that somehow I'm a contaminated fungus or whatever, whatever, that whole collection of things has the power to rob you of life, rob you of life force, kill you eventually, or get you to a point where you want to take your own life anyway.
I what science dictates is that the brain doesn't know if what you're thinking about is truly happening or if it's just an image. And so your body is going to respond to wherever your thoughts and your beliefs are. So if you hold on to all of this stuff and you believe that you're broken and you believe that you're alone and you believe that you can't be healed, your body is going to respond to that, however it does, however it can. And it there's this huge connection between people being able to function and people who have trauma that hasn't been processed.
I want to go there because one of the things you've talked about is letting, you know, you've used the inside baseball jargon, letting things go, processing things, peeling back the layers, cleaning out the all the junk on the couch so you can find the stuff that's under the cushions, the 10-year-old stuff. What in the world does it mean to let something go or process it? Like, the fact our XYZ happened one time or 50 times to a person, and it caused them to question their worth and value and feel all the stuff we talked about to start with, that's all over for a year or two or 10 or 20. And I haven't let it go, so it's now killing me in the ways that we described, a little or a lot. How do I let that go? Like, where is it? How do I let it go?
So I can't give away all of my secrets, right?
You can do whatever you want. It's the question. How do I do that?
What? There's many different things. It's not just one simple answer. It's not you do A, B, C, and you get D. There's many different techniques. Talk therapy didn't work for me, but doing neuro-linguistic programming and somatic work and energy work, that worked for my brain and my body, right? So there's different techniques that we can do. But a huge part of it, no matter what actual technique you do, is grace. And it's grace for self. And forgiving yourself for whatever happened, forgiving yourself for holding on to it, forgiving yourself for thinking you're broken, forgiving yourself for anything that you may have done that would have caused anything that you're holding on to, forgiving yourself for hanging on to things. And it's hard. It is not easy by any means, because you're in the habit of holding yourself accountable for things that a lot of times didn't even, you weren't even the cause of. You know, we take on the thoughts and the ideas and the beliefs of other people. They basically give them to us, and throughout our life, we believe that. And it's letting that go. So knowing that you are of worth, knowing that you are deserving of good things, knowing that you are not broken, and knowing that you can create anything. And it's an energetic shift, and it's something that's visual. When people get it, it's a shift, and you can see people change, and they suddenly can start doing things in ways that they've never been able to do before. And it's not one shift. It's over and over and over and over, you know.
Well, the things that caused it didn't all happen at once either.
Right.
But you know what? You said you're not going to give away all your secrets, but you did. And I'll tell you why, because you did. This, what you told me is the real power is love, forgiveness, and grace.
Yep.
So love and forgiveness and grace are the power that causes us to be cleansed, to be healed. What you've said also is that, gee, there's a bunch of different tools by which somebody might access love and grace and forgiveness, forgiveness of self, forgiveness of others, reclaiming your worth, getting rid of the notion. And those are just tools to access the power. But the power to eliminate the layers of pain and that terrifying feeling of worthlessness and all the rest is self-love, love, forgiveness, and you use the word grace, which I love.
Yeah.
And I say that not to say you gave away the store. Because even if we know that, even if I say that and claim it and you agree and we all jump up and down together and say that's the thing, we almost never can do that alone or by ourselves, because we've been by ourselves all this time and living under the ever-increasing weight of whatever it was and the churning and the rot that seems to keep stacking up. And so the facilitation of accessing, accepting, applying the purity of love and forgiveness and allowing you to be a me, to be any of us, to be a, you know, a human being with all of that that entails,
yeah,
is something that needs guidance, help, acceptance, love, validation, and all the stuff that comes through the application of tools. And the reason I said that is I wanted to ask a question.
Please.
You said talk therapy didn't work, and then there was another set of tools which allowed you to access that power, mm-hmm, of grace and forgiveness. What do you say to somebody who says, I've tried all that, and all that meaning whatever it means in their head, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work for me. I'm never going to, whatever, forgive, get forgiven, be okay. I'm never going to make that change. What would you, how would you help someone, or at least start them on the path to realize they're still not alone and they're still away?
So the first thing I do personally is when I'm working with a client, as a new client, I share my story with them,
mm-hmm,
and not necessarily in full detail, but I will give them detail of, you know, we have trauma informed coaches and therapists, but if they haven't experienced it, they don't really get it sometimes. And you need somebody who really gets you. And so the first thing I do is I share some of my experiences and I say, I understand, not fully because your experiences were different, but I understand the depths that you're feeling. I understand the feeling of unworthiness and brokenness and that nothing can ever happen for me. And so, and what that generally does is that gives them permission to know that I understand what they're going through. So they can tell me anything and I'm going to understand to a degree where they're coming from. So that bridges a little bit of that gap of being completely alone, right? That's in your trauma. The second thing is we go deep. Like I'm the kind of coach, I'm also a massage therapist. In my massage therapy, I say, let's not put a Band-Aid on a broken leg. If your shoulder hurts, it may not be your shoulder. It may be your ankle. It may be your knee. It may be your back. Let's figure out what the core problem is and not just the symptom. And so a lot of times when people are quote unquote damaged or they're hurting or they're suffering in some way, it manifests in a certain way. And if we treat just the manifestation, it's not really going to heal the core. So I get deep with my clients and I say, what is this? Let's figure out what it is. It's not that you're angry at your neighbor. There is something underneath that is fueling that. Generally, it's because of a past hurt, a past experience, something you're holding on to. Let's get to that. Work on that. And as they start to see the progress, then that belief of, I do have some worth. My life can change. I can progress. All of that starts to naturally come into play.
Well, that's magic to instill that. You know, there's a certain blessing that comes into the life of anyone. I imagine doctors, nurses feel it in hospitals. Mm-hmm. Therapists feel it when they're working with someone. A coach experiences that when they have been the catalyst or the door or the invitation or found the right tool or technique to allow that first brick to fall and the light to come in.
I will tell you something that really pushed this even more, like to the point where I didn't know that I could want to serve people in this way more than I already did, was, mm-hmm, I spoke at a conference in January in front of, mm-hmm, 250 people. And I shared the story of the trauma from the first 10 years of my life that I've only remembered a year and a half ago. And I had never told anybody. I'd never written it down, nothing. And I got on stage and we were given a topic, but that story and getting through that and some other things that had happened within the past year all tied into that. And after that, for the next day and a half of the conference, I had four women come up to me, absolutely just bawling, wrap their arms around me and say, I have never met anybody else who had a childhood like mine. And I'm like, yeah, you have. You just didn't know. There's a lot of us out there who have suffered things as children that we've never spoken of. And you have permission, because they're like, I didn't know that I was allowed to not carry this anymore. I didn't know that I didn't have to suffer this. This was given to me. I didn't have a choice. And I'm like, you have a choice now. You get to choose if you are going to keep living this way, carrying this on your back, or if you're going to let it go. And there are people out there, there's communities out there. You can find a tribe or tribes of people who will love you unconditionally. And you have permission to not carry that anymore. And just in the look on some of their faces when they were, it was just like this light bulb clicked on. And they're like, I never knew. I never knew that was a possibility. And so that really pushed me to just be like, all right, if I ever had any question before that this is what I wanted to do, which I didn't, like, this just dug it in. The change that you see in people from one or two conversations that you can have with them and give them hope and give them faith and give them an idea or a sense that they have worth, because they do. Every one of us on this planet does, just because we are. It is life-changing. It's life-changing for them and for me.
I love it. I love it, and I agree with you completely. I want to go in the future now, so let's project 2 or 3 years in the future. What's coming for Carrie? What are you going to do now? You've had this journey over the last few years, uncovered and released through the, you know, magic wand technique. I'm teasing. With the release through some processes, you gave yourself permission with facilitation of others for love and forgiveness and to accept grace, to see yourself as the wonderful, beautiful, holy, capable being that you are, to actually own that and say, I am that. Mm-hmm. I am that. I own it. I see it. I love it. I love myself. Oh, yes. So if you start there and move into the future a couple of years or 3 years, what is Carrie's vision? Like, what is she doing?
So Carrie is in the middle of a lot right now that I never, you know, go back 6 months, a year, I never would have thought was possible. Okay. Speaking on stage, that was one thing that I never thought was possible. In 3 years, my plan is to be speaking on multiple stages every year at different events, right? I was asked a few months ago to contribute a chapter to a book. Mm-hmm. And so, and the topic of our book was unlocking your hidden potential. And so I was able to share part of my story in that to spread around the world. It was a number one bestseller internationally on Amazon. And so there's the potential for 7 billion people to read that, to find hope and to find encouragement that they can overcome whatever they've been through too. I've actually just talked to the publisher, and I want to do another book. So in 3 years, I want to have at least one more anthology under this series completed. I do a little mini podcast right now, and it's for Facebook, a private Facebook group. And I'm in discussions right now of producing that on different platforms, right? And so I want to start another podcast, and I want it to be one of encouragement and joy and just very similar to what you do of letting people know that there are other people out there that have been through things and can understand what they're going through and are willing to help them, and that give examples so that they have a sense of reality for them. And so hopefully that podcast will be created by then. So there's a bunch of things that are happening.
So I'm hearing speaking on more stages. I'm hearing creating a podcast. I'm hearing being a bold advocate to testify of and share the truth of what I carry, have experienced in my life.
Yeah.
Did I capture it? What did I leave out? And some books. Write another book or two or three that shares different and more detailed or specific aspects of the healing journey, and perhaps tools that I, speaking as you, use so that they can be more and more accessible to people and they can have more hope.
Yeah.
Did I leave anything out?
There is one thing I didn't mention.
Okay.
In 3 years, I'm going to be more healed than I am now because I'm still healing. It's a constant journey. You know, it's that mountain without a top that we climb, because a lot of times I think we look at people and we see somebody who makes seven figure, or we may see somebody who's, you know, high up in the coaching community, or somebody who's an athlete or anything like that. And it's hard for us to wrap our head around the fact that they may have had a life growing up like we did, even into their adult years, and that they've overcome so much. And sometimes we think, I can't accomplish what they've accomplished because they don't understand what I'm going through. And so they, you know, we all continue to heal. We all continue to get triggered. I've said this to you before, that when I started working with my coach, I thought he was a coach because he had it all figured out and never had any problems anymore. Because as soon as a problem came up, he knew how to overcome it right away. And that's not the truth at all. So part of my goals is to make so many people aware that if I can accomplish anything, anybody can accomplish anything. If I can get over the trauma that I have been through, they can too. And I used to hate it when people said that, because I'm like, you obviously have more talent than trust me.
I agree with you, and I say the same thing and hated it the same way you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once upon a time. So I want to share, what is the name of the book? I want to know where people can find it. I want to know where people can follow you. So let's say if somebody's listened, we've got 3 or 4 minutes left. I want to know, where can they get more Carrie? Where's the book? What's the name? Who's the publisher? Where do they follow and get more good stuff?
I'll actually show you the book. It's called A Journey of Riches is the series. And then our title was Unlocking Your Hidden Potential. And so there were 13 of us from around the world that each wrote a chapter. And so there's 13 stories that deal with getting cancer diagnosis while having children, losing parents. Mine was abuse. There's 13 different stories that will bring you hope and that you'll be able to connect with no matter what your situation is. You can find it on Amazon. You can get the printed copy, or you can get it on Kindle. And I believe for the U.S. that there is an Audible version now available. So those things are available. My business, thank you. My business is called Resilience Mind and Body Coaching. And so you can check out my website at resiliencemindandbodycoaching.com. My email is resiliencemindandbodycoaching@outlook.com. And then if you look up my name, you can find me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on YouTube. I did an interview with the publisher whose name is John Spender. That video about why I wrote the book, kind of my story behind the chapter that I wrote, is up on YouTube. There's other interviews and things that I've done up on YouTube as well under my name. And on LinkedIn, currently I'm under Sis Rikkie. So SISRIKKIE.
SISRIKKIE.
SIS.
Sister. Like, yeah. Okay, I get it. Sis Rikkie. Okay, cool. So, Carrie, you have an amazing journey. You have an amazing heart. Your energy is contagious. You have inspired me to take one more step or one more run up the mountain of the topless mountain of faith, the endless mountain. To do that, every time I see and meet someone who has made a choice to let those things refine them instead of ruin them, however long they were in the first category, no longer matters.
Right.
The moment you choose, and so you have done that. Do you have a final thing you want to give me before we're done today?
So I want to share what my motto for this year is. I don't do a word, I do a motto. And my motto for this year is do it scared. And it's going to be terrifying to step into change, to step into changing the habits you've always thought, the things that you've always believed. That could be like cold plunging. I started cold plunging in Lake Michigan. I did it scared. I started running when I weighed over 400 pounds. I did that scared. No matter what you do, it's going to be scary and it's going to be fearful the first time. And every time it's going to get a little bit easier and a little bit easier. But when we're talking about getting help or speaking out about your story or trying to find your tribe, do it scared.
I love that. So listeners, take it, tattoo it on your forehead, do it scared. Carrie, thank you for coming and sharing your heart with us today.
Thank you, Kellen.
You're welcome. So you guys, I want you to hear this. Do it scared. If there's stuff that's bothering you, worrying you, your ultimate life is within your grasp. You have the opportunity to create anything you want. It's within your grasp, within your power. But just like with Carrie's story, nobody's going to do it for you. No one's going to come and rescue. No one. And it's all yours to do. And no one can keep you from your goals. No one can keep you just from starting now and going down the road to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.